any of you are following Twitter or a variety of other communication channels, you would have known that in the last week, Simon Geer was in Israel as everybody's favorite weatherman, and someone who's very involved with science and vulture conservation, all sorts of things. And so we thought we'd bring him to studio and just see how he enjoyed the trip. Simon, welcome to the show.
Yeah, thanks, Benji. It's a real pleasure to be here again. I think it's my third or fourth time on Chai.
Yeah, we've definitely had Simon in before. Simon, so you went to Israel recently. I realize that it actually wasn't your first time.
No. I was there in 1994 in a very, very different type of country.
Yeah.
On a kibbutz up on the Galilee. The kibbutz itself is actually on what had been a Syrian artillery base. So our library, amongst other things, were in old ammo bunkers and so on, which was great fun and interesting. So I spent a couple of months there as a volunteer on a kibbutz. 4 or 5 days in the old city of Jerusalem. That was pretty much my trip then. I've always been fascinated by the Middle East and particularly Israel. I think it's a really, I now know I have to call it Israel-Palestine, because what I was calling Israel is actually the whole thing.
Right.
Whereas I understand Israelis now call it something else. so that whole Israel-Palestine region, I've always found fascinating. I think it's incredibly complex, and just a really, really interesting place. So to have a chance to go there, 25 years between the two trips was fascinating.
Now, what was the reason that you were going?
The first time. Okay. So, SA Israel Foundation, I think they call themselves, had organized with Friends of Hebrew University to take a trip of academics, across. And we were specifically looking at tech transfer between academia and the private sector, because you often find professors are working with, well, they're basically inventors.
Mm-hmm.
But their skills are in knowledge acquisition and in finding things out. Their skills are not necessarily in monetizing something. And they often need, there's obviously intellectual property issues, because if you do work for a university, the IP of that work actually resides with the university. It doesn't reside with you as a person.
Right.
And often master students get this wrong and think that they are about to become huge, super wealthy because they worked on a certain project. So it's quite a complex place, and universities really need to manage this process, because it's a way of retaining academics. It's a chance for academics to make some really decent tom out of the work that they do. And the Israelis do this particularly well. They've got a very, very strong tech sector. And so we went to Hebrew University. We went to Tel Aviv. We went to a bunch of sort of tech startup type places, veg capitalist area, a place that that tries to get the Arab Israeli community more involved in tech. And just really spoke to people and learned about how we could take what Israel does really, really well back into the South African context. So I'm not really in that game. I was there to report on this.
Mm.
But we had with us lots of people from tech transfer from places like Stellenbosch, a very senior medical academic from UCT who's won all sorts of awards for his medical devices that he basically invents and then gets marketed out. So it was a really interesting mix of people.
Now, of course, you mentioned the tech sector, and there's often cool stuff coming out of Israel from in that particular realm.
Mm.
Anything stand out for you as like, oh, wow, that was cool?
Yeah, a couple of things. So one was a chip that they can now put in the back of your cornea, your retina, and it hooks directly into your optical nerve. So if you've got damage to your eyeball, but your optical nerve is still okay, and this thing then attaches to a camera on the side of your glasses, and that is then able to feed an image directly into your optical nerve, which is super science. The picture itself is not great at the moment, but it would be enough to get you around your house.
That's like cyborg, Star Trek kind of
vibe. Exactly. You've now got like chunks of metal inside your head helping you do things. So that was particularly impressive. At the same place where we saw that was at the Perez Peace Center, was another little gadget which looked exactly like a key buzzer for your, for your house or your car.
Mm-hmm.
It was a little piece of plastic. You tapped on a water bottle and pressed it, and it measured the electromagnetic field of that water and was able to ascertain whether or not that water was safe to drink, because the more impurities in the water, the different the electric field was.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah, and that was a really simple little piece of tech. You pressed a button and it showed you within 2 seconds whether or not it was safe. Really simple little things like that. Then, of course, you've got the really, out of this world stuff. We spoke to guys who'd worked on the project, the sort of seeing eye technology that Google Car uses. That's all been developed in Israel. There were guys who had a facial recognition software that you could attach to your glasses. And again, for people who are sight impaired or maybe just can't remember faces very well, you know, it'll be able to read your face and then tell me back who it is. Once I've introduced your face to it, it doesn't just get it off a database somewhere.
Off of Facebook.
So there was a lot of that sort of thing. A lot of slightly more mundane tech. You know, Israel are leaders in drip irrigation. So, we had a look at that. And that was quite nice to have a look at the very, very opposite end of technology. I mean, drip irrigation at the heart of it is a really simple idea. And I wasn't even aware that it was something that really needed inventing. I was quite surprised. It's quite new. It's not 1960s, 1970s, you know, and they're now improving it all the time. So there was a wide range of stuff we looked at. And I enjoyed that side of it. I think for me, actually just talking to modern Israelis, you know, from all different hues, and trying to get a grasp of what's going on in that country and how they feel about that country and just seeing the country, looking at things. Three things struck me about what life is like, day-to-day life, in somewhere like Tel Aviv. The first one is that free Wi-Fi is everywhere. Okay. I was really impressed with that.
South Africans, that's a big deal.
Exactly. So much so that when I sat in your green room now, I saw that Chai FM has free guest Wi-Fi. And I thought, yeah, these guys know the deal. So that, I thought that was impressive. The second one, no litter anywhere. Very, very clean country, and that always impresses me because that speaks to a whole range of social goods that are happening well. And with that, how green and walkable Tel Aviv is. Tel Aviv is now a big first world city.
Very different from when you must have been there.
Completely. It was a dusty, not quite a hovel, but it really wasn't, it wasn't a shining light like it is now. Now you look at the Tel Aviv skyline and it could be Miami, it could be LA. Not that I've been to any of those places, but you know, that's how it felt. So that was the other thing. And the third thing was, electric scooters. Everywhere we went, there were guys on electric scooters, and about 60-70% of them are privately owned that people are just taking around. Mm-hmm. And these things are dangerous. I mean, they were introduced to South Africa a while back and were banned almost straight away for just being insanely dangerous. These guys are going along at 40 k's an hour and without
helmets and all sorts of things.
That sort of attitude is reminiscent of the Israel I knew and loved sort of back in 94. But they also had a sort of Uber for, like a Boris bike kind of a thing for electric scooters.
Yeah.
And these are scooters that look, you know, those L-shaped scooters that, that kids have, you know, that they push along, you know, that you sort of stand on the platform like these, but they electric scooters that can take two people.
Wow.
And they've got a little credit card tap or a snap scan that you read. It now knows where that scooter is and where you, and that it's in your possession. You can use it for as long as you like, and then you just abandon it on the side of the road, and the next person can come and pick it up. You know, I assume you click out of it, so you're no longer paying for it. That for me was just amazing. And so you're in the city where people are whizzing around on these things like it is, you know, 2100. You know, and we did see, and we saw one guy go past on an electric unicycle, which was something I'd never even suspected existed. and he was the most hipster looking guy I'd ever seen in my entire life. But so that sort of thing really, really impressed me. It just feels like a city that is buzzing and is doing interesting stuff with really, really basic day-to-day experiences of their citizens.
Now, for South Africans, obviously, you know, we're looking at to see how can we make a change here, right? Mm. We want to be a place that's working and functional. From what you've seen, what is it that we as South Africans need to bring here or get right so that we're on top of our game?
Let me first turn that around and say there's one thing we're definitely doing better than them. And that's we are looking after our entire community better than Israel is.
Right.
I understand that Israel is an incredibly complex setup, Israel-Palestine, that is way more complex than South Africa is. In fact, my take home from 1994 Israel was we had just got democracy then in South Africa, that I was so glad that South Africa was only dealing with the problems that we had and not the problems that Israel had. And part of the reason why Tel Aviv is so safe and clean and just generally peaceful now is because Gaza's basically been locked away.
Right.
And so I'm worried that that's not sustainable because all the Israelis we spoke to speak about Israel only as the land that is very much under the control of the Knesset.
Right.
You know, so anything that is under control of the Palestinian Authority just is not considered part of Israel. And that I think is an opt-out because it means that you're not worrying about those people. You're not including them in your stats. You're not including them in your equality calculations in your business and all of those sort of things. So I think South Africa does that better. But as a result, we are maybe not, sometimes it's quite good to be selfish as an entrepreneur.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if the 10 best tech guys that you know are all white males, and you are to feel absolutely nothing for just going with that, you might find you have a situation where, you know, you don't have to branch out. And now, I think your company will be stronger and better mm-hmm. if you do that. But I think the Israeli setup, the tech setup is far more free of bureaucracy than ours is. I got that sense. I think that the crossover between government and the private sector is much, much better. So for example, you can go and spend time in the IDF. Work in an intelligence unit or in a tech unit, and then come out of that with real skills. You know, as a youngster, a 21-year-old, you've done some serious programming or something like that. You then go to university. So that's an interesting thing. We've done that the other way around.
Mm-hmm.
And you then go into university as a senior student, but with all of this technical skill that you picked up in the IDF. That, I think, is a very, very good way of doing your life. I think there is a sense of community in Israel, particularly amongst the Jewish Israelis, which is what the whole country is based on, basically. And I think that is part of the reason why they are able to pull together and be so strong.
Mm.
So that was really impressive. It feels like a fast moving economy, as it is. I mean, we know it's doubled since the mid-90s. I think they also are very, very internationally focused. And so anything you invent is straight away going to be your inventor is always looking at the international horizon. They're not thinking about the local, the local economy at all. And I think that is a real, real strength.
Absolutely. Simon, that's pretty much all we had time for today. But thank you so much for coming in. I'm glad to see that there's lessons that can be learned both ways and hopefully more engagement.
Cool. Thanks. I would. Yeah, I'll fall over myself to go back again.
Simon Gear there. And by the way, follow him on Twitter. He has some great cricket commentary and some very interesting stuff now being done with some science coming out of South Africa. So you're worth checking him out on Twitter. Very late for the news. Zanati is going to throw something at me, so we better do that right now.